Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When family is all that matters, make sure they're protected. Visit Zurich.ie to learn more about life and serious illness cover.
Tweet at Drive Time RTE.
Now, as little as 20 minutes of moderate activity a day for 5 days a week can significantly lower depression in older adults. That's according to a new study. The study was conducted by physical activity and mental health experts at University of Limerick and Trinity College Dublin, and it reveals that a physical activity dose equivalent to just 20 minutes a day for 5 days a week of moderate intensity physical activity, like brisk walking, was linked with less risk of depressive symptoms and odds of major depression. Dr. Eamon Laird is a postdoctorate research fellow at the University of Limerick, and he's the lead author of the paper and joins us now on the line. You're welcome, Eamon, to the programme this evening, and thank you very much for joining us. Okay, tell us what brought this study about in the first place.
Oh, hello, good evening. Many thanks for giving us opportunity to share our work. So this was a health research board funded study. Our senior author was Dr. Matthew Hearn from the University of Limerick. And none of this would be possible without our wonderful TILDA participants from the Irish Longitudinal Study in Aging. So this was a 10-year study looking at physical activity and depressive symptoms and depression in older Irish adults. So we followed these people up over 10 years, and what we found was that the bare minimum dose, the lowest dose possible, was 20 minutes per day or 5 days per week of moderate to vigorous physical activity, so linked with much, much lower risk of depression and depressive symptoms.
Okay. And when you say older adults, what age group are you talking about?
So these are older adults aged over 50 years.
Okay. Is there any reason to think that this wouldn't apply to younger adults as well?
Oh, absolutely not. Research has shown that across the population, everybody benefits from exercise. And what we found in our study was the bare minimum was 20 minutes. But the more you do, the greater the benefit. So you see enhanced benefits at 30 minutes, 60 minutes, and even 120 minutes per day. So the more you do, the better.
And what do you mean, Eamon, by enhanced benefits? You're just much less likely to become depressed, is it? Or how do you measure that?
The more activity you do, the lower the risk, and the lower the odds of depression or depressive symptoms. So the more exercise you do, the greater the benefit you might see. But again, physical activity is not a magic bullet. It comes in part with the lifestyle medicine approach of nutrition, physical activity, and a healthy lifestyle.
Okay. There might be older adults or even indeed younger adults sitting at home at the moment and wondering, you know, what do I do here or what do I have to do? So when you're talking about physical activity, I know you're saying 20 minutes a day. Like, is this sort of a gentle stroll enough? Do you have to get your heart rate up? Are there sort of levels that you have to reach?
We try to explain that it's something that would get you out of breath. For example, a brisk walk, going up the stairs, and doing some vigorous housework, doing something that you enjoy that gets you out of breath, and particularly with other people, gives even greater benefits. And so we're not really asking anybody to go out in the streets. We're asking them to sort of, you know, do something that you enjoy, but, you know, get out there and try and exercise.
Okay. And does it have to be done all together? I know 20 minutes might not sound like a long sort of period of time to be exercising for some people, but then for others, you know, that might seem like, you know, a big enough milestone, particularly if they have any health issues or mobility issues or anything like that.
Oh, exactly. I mean, the 20 minutes doesn't have to be one go. It could be broken up throughout the day. So tiny periods of, you know, active activity, 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there, it can all add up to 20 minutes. And remember, 20 minutes is the minimal, but the more you do, the better the benefit. And not just for depression. Our research has shown that physical activity decreases the risk of chronic disease, heart disease, cognitive decline, and it's great for your immune function.
It's absolutely fascinating, Eamon, this study, I must say. It's absolutely fascinating because 20 minutes is not all that much, really, particularly when you say a moderate walk. I mean, most people can manage something similar anyway. But can you tell me what's happening in the brain and the body? I always hear talk of serotonin or these other chemicals, and I don't fully understand. What is happening when you reach that 20-minute threshold?
To be honest, we don't exactly know at this point in time. There's still a lot of research going on trying to figure out what is the exact benefit of physical activity. From what we think and what we think we know, is perhaps it's maybe reducing inflammation, it's sort of releasing the sort of happy sort of a serotonin. It's improving your muscle function. It's improving your overall health. So again, it's only one component, but if you're more physically active, you're probably following a healthy lifestyle. You're probably drinking less, not smoking. You're being socially active. You're probably very good nutrition. So the component, everything come together, is the best benefit.
Okay, well, it's really good advice, I think. And thank you very much for joining us to talk us through it. That's Dr. Eamon Laird, who's postdoctoral research fellow at the University of Limerick, talking us through that paper. And you can text us to 51551 if you've actually found, you know, getting out there and exercising has improved your own mental health. Now, Paris politicians have agreed to impose higher parking fees on owners of SUVs, which will see the size, weight of the vehicle and its motor taken into consideration. Electric vehicles and those with large families requiring a bigger car are expected to escape the increased fees that will come to effect on the 1st of January 2024. Well, for more of this, we're joined now by Brian Caulfield, who's Professor in Transportation at Trinity College Dublin. You're very welcome, Brian, to the programme this evening. Maybe before we get into whether or not we should do it here, can you just explain to us exactly how they're doing it in Paris?
So as you said, they're not 100% sure yet who's going to have to pay for this charge, but it was pushed through by the council by a majority. I think it was a unanimous vote in Paris. And the deputy mayor that's pushing this, basically, to quote him, said that there are no dirt paths or no mountain roads in Paris, so SUVs are completely useless. So that was kind of the mantra it's been pushed in on. But Paris has been very much, over the past decade, pushing cars out of the city. The main reason for it is because of the space that these vehicles take up. From a traffic perspective and a parking perspective, they want to free up more space. So they're bringing in this charge to hopefully wean people off these larger vehicles.
And I know that is often what it said, you know, you're not driving around in a farm or you're not driving off a mountain and you don't need an SUV. But, you know, people have different reasons for having SUVs, don't they? You know, for example, if you have a bigger family, or we had a text earlier from a person who describes themselves as an old age pensioner with mobility issues. And they said they found it's much easier getting into an SUV than trying to sort of sit yourself down into a saloon car.
Yeah, and I think that there's been a creep of SUVs coming into all countries across the world over the past decade or even more. And I think that's mainly been driven by, excuse the pun, by the motor industry, and that these are the types of cars that they want to sell. You know, the issues that we had with cars prior to the explosion and the numbers of SUVs were still there as well, and we were able to manage without them.
So you wouldn't take those excuses like the bigger family or mobility issues? Really?
They're not excuses. They're very genuine concerns for a lot of people around mobility, people that are working, people that need equipment to be brought around. But I don't think that the volume of SUVs that we're currently selling is perhaps sustainable from a transport and traffic perspective, but then also obviously from an environmental perspective too.
Yeah, I think what they're suggesting in Paris is that people with a bigger family might get an exemption, although I don't know exactly how they're going to start, you know, policing that. And also if you've an electric vehicle, you get an exemption.
Yeah, I have no idea how they're going to police that with larger families. And I'm sure there's lots of ways in which the French are, I'm sure, like the Irish, in the way they could gamify that and get out of them. But I think the more important thing, maybe before we go on to talk about Dublin as well, is what we define as an SUV. Mm. A lot of people say SUVs are the crossovers, or they're, you know, say a cash car or something like that. I wouldn't classify those necessarily as an SUV. I think we need to have a very good definition of what we mean by it before we bring in something like this.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting point, Brian, because we were talking about it in the meeting, and I don't know if I have an SUV or not, to be honest with you. Like, a Hyundai Tucson, I think. So, like, it looks sort of like an SUV, but I don't know if it is or not. And it's a hybrid, in my defence, and it's good for, like, carting the kids around, you know, to different places. But do you know if that's an SUV?
I'd say you're teetering on the edge of SUV.
That's terrible. But, you know, I mean, even if I am, to be honest, if this tax is brought in Dublin, I wouldn't mind paying it because, you know, like, if that's what needs to be done to get us all out of the sort of the addiction. Like, one of the reasons I bought it is that it's really comfortable. I really enjoy being up higher in the traffic. I feel a bit sort of vulnerable being down low, actually. I feel safer being up high. Maybe that's just a psychological thing. We have a text here from a listener. We are a two-car household. A Nissan Qashqai, again to your point, Brian, described as an SUV, and a Toyota Prius, a hybrid electric vehicle. The Qashqai does 5 litres per 100 kilometres or better. The Prius averages 6 litres per 100 kilometres. They both occupy the same footprint. So why should the Qashqai pay more?
Exactly. And that's it. If this was ever to be brought into Dublin, we would need to do the state would need to have a definition of what an SUV is. At the moment, it's kind of the society of the motor industry is kind of loose definitions of what each of these types of vehicles are. We would need to have a firm definition on weight, on emissions and on size as to what these are. And I think you'd find then that the numbers that we are selling that are classified as SUVs might be a bit less.
Okay, so say then we did it. How would you expect it to work? And would you expect an awful lot of pushback? And do you think it actually would work?
Well, there would definitely be an awful lot of pushback. People really like their SUVs in this country and every other country. It was actually proposed back 16 years ago in Dublin to do something like this when we had very few SUVs. The council at the time didn't go for it, and there would be a lot of pushback. I think it's something that, you know, you flag that's coming in, you know, 5 years time or maybe less, that this is going to happen and SUVs can't come into the cities. And the main reason, forget about the climate and all the rest, the main reason is that these cars are getting bigger, but our city isn't getting bigger. You know, the road space isn't getting bigger. In fact, it's shrinking with the increase in numbers of cycle lanes and pedestrians, which is very welcome in the city centre. So that's why these SUVs kind of are an issue in our city centres. Our streets just aren't designed for them.
Yeah, the big old Range Rovers, like, or indeed perhaps my Nissan Qashqai might be sort of a bit bulky as well. That it's just it's causing problems for everybody in terms of mobility.
Exactly. In terms of, you know, you feel safe in yours because it's high up. You know, the cyclist that's next to you perhaps doesn't feel safe because you're so high up and kind of over them as well. So the street space that's in our city is for everybody, and everybody should feel equally, you know, comfortable maneuvering around the city. And if these vehicles are causing an issue, and again, I have to stress that it's not all of these crossovers, but if a certain percentage of them are causing an issue, then we should look to see how we could maybe get them out of the city centre.
All right. Damien has texted to say SUV stands for socially unacceptable. Sorry. Damien's being so judgmental here. But anyway, I take the point. He says socially unacceptable. I try once more. Socially unacceptable vehicles for urban areas. Sensible move in Paris, says Damien. So that's what SUV stands for. Brian, thank you very much for joining us. This is Brian Caulfield, Professor in Transportation at Trinity College Dublin. You can let us know what you think to 51551.